Hello.
Hello, Robert.
It is good to be with you once again. Welcome. Happy Labor Day. Do we have any laborers here? One. There's a way to tell if you're making progress on the spiritual path. One way is the importance that you give to holidays. Labor Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas. As these holidays become sort of irrelevant to you, for your feeling within yourself, an intense happiness, an intense joy, that a holiday cannot give you. When you begin to feel this way, you know you're making progress. But when you think the holiday itself has any power over you, especially Christmas, many people become despondent, they commit suicide during Christmas. Sure, high suicide rate. That's Christmas. I suppose these people remember their childhood when they used to receive a lot of toys, goodies, and now perhaps they have no one to spend Christmas with. They become totally depressed. But those are the people of the world. I'm speaking to you fine folks. You are the power, not the holiday. A holiday should not have control over you. If it does, then you believe that the holiday is important. The relative world is important. The material world is important. And of course, as we learn, you are the responsibility. The responsibility of the world is yours. You are responsible for the world, the universe. It all comes out of you. You are the creative principle as far as this world and universe is concerned. Therefore, how can you give any credence to a holiday? Think about that. All of the power is within you. All the power that exists. You are that. The holiday in itself cannot do anything for you unless you allow it to. Unless you respond to it, react to it. So many people say, I do not like holidays. But yet they get so involved in the holiday. They start preparing weeks ahead for Christmas and doing all sorts of things, which shows them that you feel that you're just an infantile person with no power. The power is in the holiday. I don't mean that you have to do absolutely nothing. You can enjoy yourself, you can exchange presents if you like, you can do all kinds of holiday things. But do not believe that a holiday has the power. In other words, do not feel hurt if you do not get a present. Do not feel hurt if no one invites you for dinner. You are the power, not the holiday. So as you examine yourself and you see where you're coming from, you can tell the progress you're making on the spiritual path by the way holidays affect you. And then we go further. How does the world affect you? What does the world show you? How do you react to this world, to person, place, and thing? Ponder this. It's important for your progress. If we've been working on ourselves diligently, practicing self-inquiry or practicing other forms of meditation, we will first become calm and peaceful, and then we will feel the power within us. We will feel the total happiness and peace that we generate. The things of this world will not be able to harm us or hurt us. No thing of this world will ever be able to hurt us again. Whether the appearance is lack or limitation of some kind, poverty or sickness, whatever. Or even the so-called happy things of this world. Getting promoted on your job, receiving a raise in salary, getting married, getting divorced, having children. Going through the various vicissitudes of life, these will just become instances to you. It's not good, it's not bad. It's not right, it's not wrong. It's just something you're watching, just like you're watching a movie. And so as you begin to watch life unfold before you, you realize inside of yourself everything is subject to the law of change. Therefore, everything in the world will keep changing, changing, changing constantly, consistently. Yet you will not react to these things. You will not react to anything. You will be at peace with yourself. Harmony will prevail. You will begin to see through situations to the source. We follow the eye thought to the source. We trace the eye thought to the source. You've heard me say this many times, but I never really discuss the source with you too much. When I speak of the source of energy within us is our spiritual heart. Not the physical heart, the spiritual heart. The spiritual heart is not a chakra. It has absolutely nothing to do with chakras. The spiritual heart is on the right side of your chest, 2 digits from the center. This is the source of universal power. We can compare this to the source of the universe. There is a central source that maintains and sustains the whole universe. I spoke of this previously. The central source makes our sun look like a particle of dust, comparatively speaking. The central sun is so tremendous that you can't even describe it. It's mind-boggling. If it makes our sun look like a spark of dust, you can imagine how big this sun must be. Now, not to go into many details, but just briefly to remind you of what's going on in this apparent universe. All of the galaxies, the entire cosmology, revolves around the central source. All of the solar systems. So when you take our solar system, our sun, all its planets revolve around the central source. It takes approximately 24,000 years for the Earth to revolve around the source. 12,000 years of descending and 12,000 years of ascending. In other words, the closer the Earth and the solar system come to the central source, the more enlightenment comes upon this Earth. Man at his highest peak. It takes 12,000 years to get to this peak. And then the ascension ensues. The Earth starts moving away from the central source. And the Earth declines again to the Dark Ages. It takes 12,000 years for this to happen. It's a 24,000 year cycle. We are now in the ascending scale. We're approximately 3,000 years into the ascending scale. Now think of your heart center on the right side of your chest. This is also the central source for you. Remember, your body is a macrocosm and a microcosm. Or the microcosm and the macrocosm. You are equivalent to the entire universe. You are a replica of the universe. The body is another universe. And as you voluntarily focus on the central source in your body on the right side of your chest, enlightenment ensues. Similar to the whole universe, revolving around the central source, the whole cosmology, ascending towards the age of enlightenment, you as an individual ascend towards self-realization as you focus on the central source. It's on the right side of your chest. Now, the idea is where all of your beliefs, all of your thoughts, all of your ideas, to go back into the central source in your heart. Everything should return to the heart center. You have to become clear. No thoughts, no ideas, no opinions, no beliefs, no karmic leftovers, no samskaras. All of these have to return to the central source. How do you do this? Well, it will take centuries, eons upon eons, for the average person to get rid of all the stuff they've got, that they've accumulated upon thousands and thousands of incarnations. We begin to understand that the I thought encompasses everything. All of your karma, all of your samskaras, all of your fears, all of the stuff you've been carrying around for years and centuries is attached to this I thought. It's a thought. The ego. As you trace back the ego to the central source, the ego merges in the central source, in the heart center, and you become self-realized, liberated. Now you realize what you have to do. This is what has to be done to become totally free. So, since the beginning of time, it has been most difficult for a person to do this by themselves. Therefore, sages have appeared on this earth plane to give you the push you need to return to the central source. You can only go so far by yourself. You may practice meditation for centuries and not get any further than you are now. When you become sincere, and as you let go of everything and everybody, you will ultimately be attracted to a teacher, a sage. Yes, there are a few people who do not need a sage. There are a few people who use the mountain as a teacher, the river, the trees, the sky. There are a few people who look at these things as a sage and become self-realized. But this is far in between. The average person needs a sage. Why do I use the term sage? I'm not speaking of a preacher or a minister or a philosopher. Those are people who have head knowledge. Those are people who have studied textbooks. I received a PhD in philosophy. I've studied religions. and I'm able to recite these things backwards and frontwards. But I've never had a spiritual experience. It is therefore written in the textbooks that only a sage who has had a spiritual experience themselves can lead you towards the goal, can bring you home all the way. It is up to you to do your part by being true to yourself. Being honest with yourself. Looking at your life and seeing the things that are holding you back. Beginning to work on yourself diligently, removing these obstacles so you may go forward. You begin to learn about Atma Vichara, self-realization, self-inquiry. You begin to practice these things. Now, what is your goal when you practice Atma Vichara, self-inquiry? The goal is to bring the eye back to the heart. For the eye to go back into the heart, the spiritual center. That is the goal of self-realization. That is the goal of self-inquiry. As long as you believe you are the doer, what has appeared to happen is the I thought, for some reason or other, has left your heart center and has entered the brain through the spine. Thus you become self-aware. You become aware of your real self, not your real self, your small self. You become totally aware of that you're a person and you're living in a world and you have to overcome problems, do certain things for yourself to be happy. This is the isolated work. This is your mind at work. This is your ego at work. So instead of trying to get rid of the ego, the mind, the I thought, you begin to trace the I thought back to the heart. You follow the I thought back to the heart center. Remember, all of your problems, everything in this world is attached to the eye. Always remember this. Never forget this. All you have to do is remove the eye thought from its existence. Remove your eye, and it will be realized. Think how many times you say I during the day. I am this, and I am that, and I need this, and I need that. I am happy, I am lonely, I am poor, I am rich. You're always referring to this I. If there were no I left, there would be nothing to say. If you cannot use I, you will not talk so much. Yet you're always using I. So the secret is to trace the I thought back to the source and be free. You do this by inquiring to yourself, who am I? This is the way you trace the thought back. Who am I? What you are doing is you're inquiring within yourself, what is the source of this I? Every time you inquire, the I begins to move back into the heart more and more. Every time you make that statement to yourself, who am I? The I begins to leave the brain and returns to the heart, slowly but surely. Yet the I thought does this automatically when you're in deep sleep. When you are in deep sleep, you are self-realized. Only you're unconscious, so you don't know it. The I has left the brain and has returned to the heart center. That's why there are no thoughts. You were free at that time when you're in deep sleep. The idea is to do this while you're in the waking state. The reason the eye returns to the heart center when you're in deep sleep is because there's no thinking going on. No one is thinking about anything. When the thoughts are free and clear, the eye automatically returns to the heart center. So, you have to understand this and try to make this happen in a waking state. You're in the waking state right now. But your mind is filled with thoughts. Therefore, the eye center, the eye thought will not return to the center. When you're thinking thoughts. This is why I emphasize so often to stop thinking. Stop the thoughts from coming. Do whatever you have to do to quiet the mind, to make the mind quiescent. Then the eye will return to the heart center and you'll be totally free. Now you have an idea what's going on in the heart center. When you meditate and you're not practicing self-inquiry, you can meditate on the heart center. You should meditate on the heart center. When you're doing the I Am meditation, meditate on the heart center. Feel the I Am coming and going from the heart center. When you inhale and you say I to yourself, feel it going to the heart center. When you say I am, feel it going out of the heart center. When you practice visualization, if you want to visualize Jesus or Buddha, or Krishna, or somebody that you respect, see that person in your heart center. The heart center is very powerful. What is absolute reality itself? It is the effortless, choiceless, pure awareness that we always talk about. This is where the heart center is. Let everything return to the heart center. Don't hold back. When I speak about surrendering, you surrender to the heart center. Surrender everything. Let go of everything. Let it all fall back into the heart center. This will give you freedom. This will give you joy. This will give you unalloyed happiness. The day will come when you understand that you are not the body, you are not a doer, you are not the mind. You are consciousness. All-pervading, omniscient, omnipotent. And you will find total freedom. It is now time to play Stop the Guru, Stump the Guru, Stop the Guru, Kill the Guru. We have our stumpers here. Yeah. Remember on Sunday when I come in to write some questions down. The first stumper.
Oh my goodness, we've got lots of stumpers here.
Lots of stumpers. It's going to be a long afternoon.
It's okay, my TV broke.
Your TV broke.
You're finished.
We do not know what anything is. How do we realize what is real or false?
Who is the one who wants to know? The one who wants to know already is. The realizer is already there. There's nothing at all you have to do about this. There's nothing you have to do. Nothing. Your real nature is absolute freedom. What is real and what is false are only in the relative realm. In the relative realm you see real and you see false. But as you work on yourself, as you go deeper within yourself, the substratum of all existence will be revealed to you. The reality of life will be revealed to you. It will be like the screen where images are shown on the screen. And you will know that you're the screen. Therefore, ask yourself, who wants to know what is real and what is false? The ego does. Do not concern yourself with this. As you practice self-inquiry, as you practice forms of meditation, as you dive deep within yourself, the reality will present itself all by itself. Therefore, the one who wants to know the answer to this question is the ego. For the ego is always up to mischief, the mind. It wants all kinds of answers. If the mind begins to be still, to be quiet, as you learn to quiet the mind, what is real will be felt by you. You will feel the reality within yourself, which is unalloyed happiness, infinite peace. You'll begin to feel joy and love, compassion. These traits will come out by themselves, and they will be the real. It will happen all by itself. The false will not present itself any longer. There will no longer be a false for you. Therefore, again, work on removing the ego, the mind, the I thought, and the real will present itself to you all by itself. Next case.
Does being a disciple to a sage infer a dependency, and is dependency a healthy relationship?
On the contrary, there is no dependency between a disciple and a sage. There's only an understanding. The understanding is that the sage is somebody that you want to be like. As if you're taking piano lessons. You do not depend on the pianist, the teacher. What you do is you learn what the teacher has to offer. For you can't play like the teacher. But as you keep practicing piano, theory, actual practice, the day will come when you're able to play like the teacher. You will become a teacher yourself. You become the pianist. But you don't beg the teacher to make you play the piano, or beg the teacher for his knowledge or her knowledge. There's an understanding between you and the teacher. You are the disciple, which means it's up to you to find the truth. It's up to you to understand what the teacher has to offer and go all the way in the teaching. But never be dependent on a teacher. Be dependent on yourself. The true state is only yourself, no one else. The Satguru, the real guru, the real sage, does not allow you to be dependent on him or her. The real sage makes you stand up on your own two feet. He always throws the ball back to you. He makes you see that you are the power. You've got everything you need within yourself. There's really no difference between you and me. Who sees the difference? You do. But the sage does not see the difference. There's no difference in the makeup of the sage. The sage is all pervading. And so are you. Next case.
Robert, since I find your confessions of what you see and what you experience so helpful, may I ask to describe another personal confession of an experience you've had?
There are not particular experiences that I've had. There's only been one experience. And that is, I was able to perceive the falsity of the universe and the reality of the self. We go back to the example of the mirror. A mirror cannot see itself. Therefore, it sees its reflection in the universe and the world. So this body here has been able to become transcended and has been able to observe the whole universe's perfection as non-reality, as God, as Brahman, as absolute reality, as nothing, as everything. For the sage sees himself. And the sage is part of the whole universe. The essence of the sage is everywhere, in the trees, in the mountains, and people, and bugs, and insects, and everything, plants. So there's only one experience you have when you realize that something happens to you. The universe disappears as it is, as it appears to be, and the reality appears as the universe. You're always aware of the reality. Whereas the average person is always aware of the world. The average person looks at the world and believes the world to be real. Whereas I look at the world and see it as a manifestation of Maya. The reality is in the self. And I am that. So again, there's only one experience that I've had. And that is to see the unreality as not being real, not being prevalent. And the reality as being everything else. That's it. Try to understand this. Realization does not make you have different experiences. If you have different experiences, it would mean you would never realize to begin with. When you continue to have experiences. Reality is one infinite experience. The disappearance of the universe and the appearance of the self. That's it. Next case.
Dear Robert, I'm learning in the silence that learning humility is my only lesson, but I can't seem to learn it. Can you help by describing humility, its various aspects, how to let humility happen, and etc.? Maybe I need specifics. Thank you.
Humility comes by itself when you inquire, who am I? Well, when you inquire, who am I? You'll realize you're not this, you're not that, you're not anything of this world. And as you realize this, you'll also understand everything that's come out of you at the same time. If everything has come out of you, you become humble. You develop a tremendous humility. For if you are me, what can I possibly do to you except love you? And that's humility, love. Reverence for all of life. Ahimsa. Loving everything. As it is, as it appears. This cannot come by itself unless you have realized to an extent the truth about yourself. Humility will then be part of your realization. It will no longer be a word like humility or love or peace. I use these words to make you understand what I'm talking about. It will just be. Not this, not that. It will just be being, pure being. It will be oneness. One reality. One life. One nirvana. One absoluteness. One. And that's humility.
You speak of setting in silence, but within the silence there is still thought. Could you speak about this silence?
In the real silence, there's no thought. When you sit in the silence, you are freeing yourself from thought. You do certain practices and certain things to yourself. So the thoughts come less and less and less and less and less, and they disappear completely. That's the object of sitting in the silence. Consequently, if you sit in the silence for a long enough time, inquiring now and again, who am I? What is life? Where did I come from? You will become more and more silent. Quietness will pervade. It will happen by itself. Then you'll be in the true silence. But sitting down is not the true silence. Until you quiet the mind. Until the mind becomes totally quiescent. Totally still, totally free. You consequently have to do the practices. Have to observe the mind in action as it moves. Observe the mind waves moving inside of you. Observe the sensations of your body. Observe what's going on inside of you all the time. And this will quiet you. It will begin to become quieter and quieter and quieter. The more you observe, the deeper you go within. The deeper you go within, the quieter the mind becomes. And then you'll be in the true silence. Next case.
Does the relationship between an enlightened master and an unenlightened student help the student after his death, even if the student is not enlightened?
Yes. If you've been with a teacher for a while, a sage, I'm not speaking of a week or 2 weeks or a month, but if you've been with a sage for about a year and over a year, the sage has become part of your essence. And the sage can never leave you again. Perhaps all when the sage seems to die, does he really die? Remember, the slave is not in the body, whether he's in the body or the pit in the body or not in the body. The slave is not the body at all. There's no body called a slave. The slave is totally and completely transcended and transmuted the body. It makes no difference to the slave whether he's alive or not alive. What you call life, what you call death, or totally, total nonsense in the sage. Because there's no life, there's no death, there's no birth, there's no perseverance. Consequently, when the sage appears to leave the body to you, it's an appearance to you, but not to the sage. You continue thinking of the sage, seeing the sage in your heart center that we were talking about previously. And the sage will always be real for you. You'll be able to even converse with the sage. The sage will always be with you, as you and you. It also depends on your relationship with the sage. If you've been a devotee, you'll always have the sage with you wherever you go. If you've been a disciple, then you would have had to be with the sage for a long time to be able to feel the sage's presence. And if you've been a seeker, then you'll find another sage. So it's up to you. It's what's going on within yourself. This will determine whether the sage is with you or not, when the sage appears to leave the body. In
this case. Can I add to that question?
Yes.
What if the devotee left his or her body and was not realized at the time with the, in the next lifetime or incarnation or whatever, would the sage be with that devotee?
That's a good question. The devotee always follows him or her own progress. In other words, if you've been a real devotee and you leave your body, you will continue on the path where you were. And if you've been with the sage, close relationship with the sage, you will be again with the sage. Now, even though the sage has not left the body, you will still be with the sage. You will become the essence of the sage. You will be in the sage, with the sage. Even though you've left the body and the sage is not, the sage will never desert you. For you'll be able to feel the omnipresence of the sage, the all-pervadingness of the sage, when you leave the body. The sage will always be with you, never to leave you at all. So whether you're the sage or whether you're the devotee, it's all the same. You are in the sage and the sage is in you. And it will always be that way.
What are the responsibilities of the master to the disciple, and what are the responsibilities of the disciple?
The master to the disciple is to be an example of truth, an example of the teaching, and to be able to transmit grace, love, joy to the disciple, so the disciple may awaken to discover that he is also the sage, has always been the same sage. The sage takes a disciple in his heart and holds him there forever. The disciple takes care of the sage. It's a reciprocal thing. Looks out for the welfare of the sage. Make sure the sage is self-sufficient. For the sage in the material world, in a way, becomes sort of dependent on the disciples and the devotees. So one is helping one and the other is helping one. It's a reciprocal thing. The sage gives himself completely to the devotees and the disciples. And again, since the disciples live in the material world, the disciple and the devotee takes care of the sage materially. This is a true guru-disciple relationship. For instance, when I was running around India, when I was a young fellow, strong and robust, whenever I went to see a sage, the first question that was on my mind was, how does the sage live? How does the sage maintain and sustain himself or herself, whatever the case may be? I did not come to the sage saying, what can I get out of the sage? I wonder if the sage will enlighten me. I want to pull all the information I can out of the sage and then go to another sage. This is selfishness. This is why most disciples and seekers run around all over the world looking for sages and never getting anywhere. Because they're going to the sage for the wrong reason. They're going to the sage to pull from the sage. They want something from the sage. And this is the wrong attitude. When you go to a sage, you should surrender yourself totally to the sage. And you shouldn't deal with that sage at all. You shouldn't just go there to say, now what can I get out of the sage? What can I pull out of the sage? What information? I want the sage to touch me, to enlighten me, to look at me a certain way, to enlighten me. This is all selfishness. The attitude should be, what can I do for the sage? How can I serve the sage in love and devotion and peace? For you understand, and you should understand, that the sage is not of this world. And the sage doesn't usually care what happens to him materially or otherwise. The sage just flows with the punches. Goes along with whatever happens. The sage will usually never tell a devotee, I have no food. I need shelter. But the sage doesn't really care. The sage is always happy wherever he is, whatever he's going through. It doesn't matter. But it's up to the devotees to keep the sage in his body by maintaining and sustaining the sage. And then the sage, the knowledge of the sage, the power of the sage is transferred to the devotee. This is a true guru-disciple relationship. Next case.
What is the meaning of life?
In two words.
Life has no meaning whatsoever. It doesn't mean a thing. Those of you who are running around frantically trying to make things happen are making terrible mistakes. Everything has been preordained. Everything is happening according to a divine plan. Everything that is supposed to happen to your body will happen by itself. Life has no meaning. The real reason it has no meaning is because it doesn't exist the way it appears to exist. There is no life that really exists. The world does not exist. The universe does not exist. You do not exist as you appear to be. So life is meaningless. And the question arises, what am I doing here? Who says you're here? First you believe that you're here, and then you believe you want to have a meaning to life. What you really mean by asking that question is, how can I get everything I want in this world? That's what you really mean. How can I attain and obtain the things that I desire? Riches, houses, cars, all the things of this world. Then you think life will be meaningful to you. It will only give you more suffering and more pain. Realize life is meaningless. Only the self exists and you are that. You are all-pervading, absolute reality. You are pure consciousness, this is your real self. You have never been anything else but that. And that's it.
Could you say that then the meaning of life, or another way of saying that, the real value of life is the self?
You can't really say that because the ego is making a statement.
But isn't what the person's pointing to in there? What's the meaning of life? I mean, what's the real value of life that's worthwhile to become? And it's the self.
It's better to ask yourself the question and be silent. In other words, ask yourself the question, what is the meaning of life? Do not say it's the self.
Yeah.
Just keep silent. And anything will be revealed to you. But try not to have too many answers. What is the ego answering?
So the meaning of life is in the discovery of our real nature.
In a way you can say that, but then who has to discover the real nature? Your real nature was never lost. If your real nature was lost, you would have to discover it. But since it was never lost, there's nothing to discover. That's why I said be silent.
But if it was never lost, how come everybody in the world is trying to discover it?
Ask them yourself. Find out.
Yeah, I mean, there's concealment.
Whose illusion? Whose concealment? Right, you're speaking of your own experience. Do not concern yourself with others. Do not think what others are doing. Do not think that others are confused or whatever they are. Leave them alone and work on yourself. You are the one. When you're able to see the truth about yourself, you'll be able to see everyone else as yourself also. So right now you're seeing everyone as yourself, confused. You see everyone as being this way and that way, and not being the way you think they should be. But you're actually seeing your image, like the mirror. When you grow spiritually, when you unfold spiritually, you rise to a higher plateau, then you'll be able to see everyone as your new self. And when you become self-realized, you'll see everybody else is self-realized.
The concealments of the self must have some function in this design plan of illusion and concealment and then discovery. It must play some role, even in illusion, but it still must play some kind of role.
On the contrary. As long as you feel you are the body, then you feel there has to be a role for it to play. There's no role for it to play at all. When you're in a darkened room, you turn on the light, there's light, and the darkness is dissipated forever. Nothing happened in between. When you awaken, you will realize that you've always been awakened. There are no roles to play, there never were any roles to play. You've always been that. But right now you're speaking of playing roles, of the world being this way and that way, of people being this way and that way. Because you're like that.
Concealment of the self.
Oh. Nobody's concealing anything. There's no place to conceal it. Who's the concealer? And who's the concealee? They do not exist. It is only the I thought playing tricks on you.
I thought it didn't exist, how could it play tricks on
me? Because you believe it exists.
I must be insane.
That's the answer. Now you know.
You got to the bottom finally.
That's the best answer you can always give. You're insane.
But we're all insane.
Of course.
Except the realized
one. Never mind the realized one, we're all insane.
There's a madhouse.
What's a madhouse? Just think of the things people believe and see if you're not insane. Look at your beliefs. Look at what you do all day long and see if you're not insane. Any announcements? Prasad.
No prasad.
One Thursday we had tons of prasad.
I know.
And so we come to the end of another session. Remember to love yourself, to bow to yourself, to pray to yourself, and to worship yourself. For God dwells in you as you. Om Shanti, peace. Go forth and labor on this Labor Day. Enjoy yourself, be happy. All is well.